Great. Good morning, everyone. So, both of us will be talking about entanglement dynamics. We are used to studying ground states, right? And of course, we know a lot about different kinds of ground states. So, how they can break symmetries, whether they have topological order, and so on. But more recently, a rather different set of question started attracting attention. And so, in these questions. Essentially concern highly non-equilibrium quantum dynamics. Quantum dynamics and part of the challenge is to understand the highly excited many-body states. So of course this is a very different set of questions, where tools you use for ground states don't apply, and so why are people interested in this? Partially the motivation comes from experiments. Right. So there are new kinds of artificial quantum systems. Some examples are called atoms and optical lattices, polar molecules, and so on. So, and we've had a couple of talks on that, right? So there are artificial quantum systems, or say called atoms, and so. And what is cool about them is that they're very well isolated from environment. They're very tunable, right? And what is maybe even more important is they have slow intrinsic time scales, right? So you can characterize their non-equilibrium states. So theoretical challenge is to find different universality classes of systems according to their dynamical properties of quantum dynamics. And so far there are two main classes of systems with different dynamical properties. So generic classes of systems, and so the first kind is ergodic systems, right? So these are more or less conventional systems which generally thermalize as a result of their own quantum evolution, right? So these systems thermalize. And essentially they reach a stationary state which is described by statistical mechanics. And the second class, which is quite different, is many-body localized systems. And in a little bit I will properly introduce them and explain how they work. And these systems generally don't thermalize. Right, so they don't thermalize, and therefore, even if they reach stationary state, they're not described by statistical mechanics. So traditionally, when studying properties of different systems, people look at linear response functions, right? How do they conduct heat or particle number, for example. And so, in generally, ergodic systems conduct, right? So, transport coefficients are not zero, and here, many body localized systems actually have zero conductivity. But it turned out that actually it's useful to go beyond linear response and think about a different kind of setup, right? So, and this setup is pretty violent quantum quench, right? So the setup we would consider would be the following.
Conductivity, yeah. Do you have to define conductivity when you're not talking about systems where stat-mech works?
In principle, yes. In principle, yes. So, but let's say if I define it just by linear response, right? Just by Kubo formula.
Depends on what state you start with and how you ramp it up. And you wait.
Right. You're right. It does. So actually defining conductivity.
You know
here,
what the equation means necessarily.
Well, you could.
Well, how about in terms of diffusion? You just add a particle, add extra particles, so you're not sort of diffuse.
Right. So one could look at
diffusion. There may be many definitions, but do they all agree?
Mm-hmm. But so, do they all agree? I think all reasonable definitions will give you zero here, right? So, but let me not go into that because we'll actually be interested in something in a rather different setup. So, but yeah, but the short answer, I think as Matthew said, so it's easiest to think about diffusion, right? So just you could ask, you know, if you had an extra particle on top of some eigenstate, what is the probability to find it in the vicinity of the same place, right, at very long times, which is different from conductivity, right? So. But our setup would be the following. So let's prepare system in some simple initial state. So let's say a product state. In a product state, so for example, if I'm dealing with spins, I can take a simple state where each spin is pointing in some direction and the state as a whole is a direct product. Then we just evolve it with the system Hamiltonian, right? And we ask what happens, right? So what are the properties, right? So we need to characterize properties of this time-evolved wave function. And so in particular, we can ask how much entanglement have we generated, right? So and that's would be our focus today. So, and you could wonder, so why entanglement, right? So why should I look at entanglement and not, for example, at, you know, transport of heat or particle number? Right? Why entanglement? And so it will become clear later in the talk, but in general, you would see that entanglement gives you some additional information compared to transport of other quantities. Additional information, which you would miss, right, if you just looked at more conventional quantities. And in particular, you would see that recently, so. Thinking about this exact setup and thinking about entanglement gave very useful insights into MBL phase. Insights into MBL phase, right? Moreover, this proved to be a very useful tool in numerics. And so, and finally, I think the bigger hope is that dynamics of entanglement. Let's say combined with the entanglement properties of eigenstates could be used sort of to distinguish different regimes of quantum dynamics. Okay. Right. So it could be could be a tool, right, to essentially diagnose, right, which phase which phase your system is in. Okay, so let's now discuss, you know, how does entanglement spread in different systems. And so, and let's start with some general constraints. And so, and I would focus really on lattice systems. Lattice systems, and moreover, I would talk about systems in one special dimension. For simplicity, but you know, most of what I would say can be extended to higher dimensions. So yeah, so let's consider some lattice system. Let's say it could be system of spins or fermions. So with the local Hamiltonian. For example, I can just consider Hamiltonian, right, which includes on-set interaction and two set interactions. So then we have Lie-Bronson bound, which tells us that quantum correlations here have a finite velocity of propagation, right? So if I time evolve my system, right, only there is an effective light cone. It's a Lie-Robinson bound. Tells us there is finite velocity for generating correlations. Right, so I have this light cone, and after time t, only degrees of freedom within the slide cone can get entangled.
Right? But that's not true for bosons, for example. That is not Lie-Bronson bound for bosons.
Right. So this is let's think about systems where locally Hilbert space is bounded. Right? So spins or fermions. Right, so but this is a good point. Actually I don't know pretty much anything about boson systems.
I mean, if you use the Dirac dynamics of fermions, then of course that's
for the light cone. So you have to use showing
the picture for bosons, and you would also get
light cones. Well, for bosons, I mean, so conventionally the Robinson bound is only for systems with bounded, locally bounded Hilbert space, right? So. Mm-hmm.
This is
right.
This is just relativistic quantum mechanics. Mm-hmm. And in principle, there is no light cone.
But I thought it for fermions. For
fermions?
No. It's not.
Okay.
Sorry. So what happens if you just simulate a bosonic system numerically?
Well, problem is, you know, you would truncate, right? You would truncate the Hilbert space, so then you're back to the story, right? Mm-hmm. So now,
What's it? The time scale is set by the set effective. What sets the time scale?
What sets
you have the length scale.
You mean what sets this velocity?
Yeah.
So it's really just the norm of the terms in your Hamiltonian, right? So you can express this velocity, right, in terms of this norms, essentially. Hmm? Now, so because of that, so you expect that entanglement that you generate at time t, right, is at most linear, right? So there is some prefactor which essentially has to do with the number of states, right, in this volume, velocity, and then time. Right, so entanglement is at most linear.
This is a quantum global quench.
Yes, yes.
It's a bipartition time across.
This is bipartition, right.
Oh, bipartition.
Right, exactly, yeah. So,
okay.
Now, so in principle, going directly from Lie-Robinson bound to this, maybe it's not completely straightforward, so but there are papers which prove bounds on how quickly entanglement can grow, right? So one paper I found is from Frank, so it's Jan, Marian, and Verstrate, and this is 1304-5931. Right, so essentially, so as far as I understood it, essentially, they prove that the rate of entanglement growth is finite in this kind of systems, right? Which implies that this as well. Yeah.
And what happens as you ramp up the strength of the coupling, the interaction?
You mean as you ramp it up really strong, such that this velocity becomes close to speed of light, or?
Is that what happens?
Well, then you know, then.
How does it grow with the strength of the interactions?
It's essentially proportional, right? It's just proportional to.
It's seven time scale.
Right. So it's, I mean, you have only two scales here, right? It's, you know, norm of HI, and you have lattice constant, right? And that's all you have. Right, so in principle, it grows linearly, then, you know, it becomes too large, you know, the whole thing breaks down, right? Becomes relativistic. So this is the general bound. Now we could ask, so is this bound actually saturated in some cases? And so let's now focus on delocalized systems. And so I'm distinguishing delocalized from ergodic because people actually discussed integrable systems a lot. Right, so let's say free fermions. Right, so there are integrable systems, and here one can show that entanglement, in fact, does grow linearly, and Josephine will talk more about it. Now, as far as ergodic systems are concerned, not that much is known. So there is a belief, right, which is maybe not very firmly justified, is that here entanglement also grows linearly. But this is really only supported by numerics. So there is a paper by Kim and Hughes. So there is no derivation of this fact, and in principle it's unclear, right, if it's general. And this was obtained just, you know, by doing numerics on a small spin chain, you know, particular spin model which is believed to be ergodic. Question?
Well, in the first case, are you going to relate this to whether the system thermalizes or not? So are you going to, I mean, in a thermal state, you expect the entanglement of a finite regions to grow at the size proportional to the size of the region. Therefore, if it's going to become stationary, then it must grow, you know, L, you replace L by T, and then that's what.
Mm-hmm. So, in terms of thermalization, I mean, they don't have to be directly related, right? Because I can, let's say, if I take a system of nearly free fermions with very weak interactions, right? Entanglement would grow linearly, but it would take much longer for the system to thermalize, presumably. Right? So, in general, I think I don't think it's I think from numerics, you can see that entanglement is faster than thermalization, because this was done for some system with weak disorder, right? And entanglement spreads ballistically, but energy and charge diffuse, right? So there is this difference, right? So full thermalization is slower generally, I think, than entangled growth.
Can I have one comment about the second talk, just to clarify, not you?
So the what Josephine will talk about will be the holographic system, which are advanced. So that's the only analytical result for advanced systems, the second talk today. She will not be talking about the integral system, because she's talking about high-dimensional CFT, which are strongly interacting, and they're believed to be ergodic.
I'll just mention in passing. I mean, there are one plus one CFTs, which are interoperable.
Right. So one plus one CFT may be integrable, but the high dimensional one, which people are studying using holography, then generally doesn't expect. There are no infinite number of terms of dots.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, this is.
So that's also in the NT.
True. So I'll leave this to Josephine. So, and actually, I'll go to my main focus, which would be localized systems. And so let me show you a simple model, right, which shows both MBL and ergodic phase. All right, so this is just one-dimensional thermions in disorder potential. Right, so I have hopping, nearest neighbor hopping. Then I would add disorder. Right, so this is just on-site disorder. So on-site energy is drawn from some distribution, and then I would also add interactions between nearest neighbors. Okay, so. What do we know about the phase diagram of this simple model? So first of all, let's put interactions to zero. Right? So then we just have non-interacting fermions in disordered potential. So this is Anderson localized, which means that all the single particle eigenfunctions are, essentially localized to some region of space and have exponentially decaying tails. Now, one of the interesting things that happened over past few years is sort of understanding what happens at non-zero V. Right? So at V equals zero, we have Anderson regime. And so it was shown that actually localization persists up to some finite value of interaction. And so this is the MBL phase. And then so at some critical interaction, system goes into ergodic phase. Right, so this model shows all three possible phases. And one question to ask.
There's three parameters, T, W, and V.
Right, so let me fix T and W, right, and then vary V. But you can get this transition by varying, of course, any of the parameters.
Can you talk about some specific energy?
Yes, so in principle, so let me talk about states near the middle of the band, right? So these are really, really high energy states, right? But this transition you find at any energy density in principle, at any finite energy density. Any other question here? Okay, so one question to ask. So is MBL different from Anderson, right? And this is where this quantum quench setup proved actually very useful. So there were two numerical papers, right? We just studied essentially this model and studied how entanglement spreads. So this was paper by Prozan, Znidarić, 76. And then there was a paper from the Berkeley group, Barderson et al. So this was 1202. So first of all, they measured fluctuations of the particle number, let's say in the left part, right? So and you expect that if system conducts, so you have, you do your quantum quench, there is left part and right part, right? And first you can just measure how do particles move. And here's the function, the answer was boring, so in both Anderson and MBL case, you find that there is essentially very little happening, right? So some particles can hop across the boundary a bit, and then the whole thing saturates. Now, entanglement turned out to be a different story. So first of all, if you do it for Anderson case, right, you again find something boring. So there is a bit of action in the beginning, and then it just saturates, right, after a short time. But in the, this is Anderson, but in the MBL case, actually, they found that entanglement keeps growing, right, for a very long time, and it follows a very good log T behavior. Right? So this is a puzzle, right, in particular. So it seems that even though your system doesn't conduct, right, somehow there is still some information exchange. And there is a couple of important features, right? So first feature is that time scales are very long, right? And so you can easily still see short spin chain doing something at times which are, let's say, of order 10 to the 10 inverse T or something, inverse V, for example, right?
Just let you draw one sample, an average of
so
different energies.
This is
different samples.
Well, this was disorder averaged, but if you take one sample, it looks just like that. Right. So this
is it known how big the variations are?
Yes. So it was. I mean, of course. So essentially, the probability to get something dramatically different decays exponentially with the system size, right? So you
system size is important, or the T is
important? Well, so there is a question, you know, here there is a question. Let's say you have some disorder realization, right? You have one disorder realization. So there is an exponentially small probability, you know, in a finite sample, it's actually describes delocalized phase, even though you know, typical configuration is localized. Now there is, actually, I'm not quite right, so there is another effect. And, you know, we'll get to that. So in principle, of course, the precise slope of the slope depends on the initial state, right? So there is some variation associated with that.
So are you beginning from a product state, as you said
yes.
earlier?
Yeah.
Just completely...
Completely so classical state.
That has a certain energy with respect to this Hamiltonian. So is that where you stay? Is it in the middle
right.
of the band? Or?
So let me... this doesn't matter too much, but let me say that this is really a state which has a lot of energy, right? Which has energy of order 1 per site.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really in the middle of the band. But this turns out that doesn't matter. So if you engineer some state which is has low energy density, it would show just the same behavior, maybe with a smaller slope.
You still split the system into, right?
Yes. So always, yeah. From now on, I'll just talk about by pretending.
So if you did do that for the ergodic regime, you would have the.
Well, for ergodic regime, yeah. Let me pick another color. So for ergodic regime. Problem is that it grows very quickly, right? So you'll see something like that, right? So over time, remember, these are very small systems, like 20 spins at most, right? So you'll see this. So at time of order 10 or so, it will essentially saturate, and, you know, and good luck distinguishing linear from some, let's say, power law, right? because you only have like one digit of time.
And the delta n squared will also be?
Delta n would, yeah, it would grow fast as well. So here in this case, really, entanglement and motion of particles go hand in hand.
But people did look at later, just in the ergodic phase, defining it. This was the paper you just referred to, like Hughes' paper.
Yes. But again, this is very short times, right?
So, but in that other recent paper by David Hughes, it was pretty clear. I don't remember mm-hmm. the system sizes, but it is linear.
Linear at the very beginning.
Yeah, I mean, very beginning, maybe it's t squared, but then it becomes linear.
I want to persist on the question about the sample-to-sample variation. So this, we can take the infinite system limit for this,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And then system size shouldn't come into it. And I should be able to ask about the sample-to-sample variation of S.
Depends. So if you disorder average, it would not come in. But if you, you know, I could still get a, let me plot disorder, right?
So I want to ask specifically about the distribution in a way. So uh-huh. But the simplest question is, if plot the disorder averaged entropy,
yeah.
You tell me that I can do this for a very large system, it'll be independent of the system size, it'll look like this.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Now let me plot the variance over different disorder distributions. It should be small compared to this, but how does it scale? Does it grow? Does it?
Yes, that's a good question. So. Right, you're right. So there would be some distribution, let's say at a given time, right? Let me prepare a fixed initial state, like let's say up-down state, right? Mm-hmm. Or you know, putting fermion on every other side, right? Yeah. Then there is, depending on the solarization, there is some width to this, right? So statement is that this width would not change significantly as you increase the system size at relatively short times. Right?
Yeah, I'm assuming that the system size is not too important for that, but because this is uh-huh. somehow all
but
entanglement within some region which is finite around.
Yes,
the
yes. Cut, so, right? But you're asking how would this width change with.
Basically, asking the question, you know, how good is the self-averaging of this entanglement?
So if there's a region around the cut that has mm-hmm. it just randomly happens to be pretty ordered, then you may get a linear contribution.
Yes, exactly. But probability of this expansion is
like the coefficient of the log. I mean, sometimes.
Uh huh.
But actually, I have a question about small time. So the rate of actually zero entanglement. The rate of entanglement is zero.
Uh-huh.
So it cannot grow linearly for very small times.
Right. So it starts like that.
Is there a difference for small times between the regions?
No. Not a significant difference. No. Here it's also actually this log t, so there is some initial, you know, I hit some details, but in fact it looks like that. Yeah. There is some small shoulder, maybe, and then there is a crossover to this log t.
Is the distribution Gaussian?
I didn't study it, but in general, so.
So is it
the tail of these exponentials?
Exactly.
So essentially, I don't know the precise answer, okay, but. This width is finite, right? But the probability of getting something which is greater than log is really exponentially small, right? So self, you know, I don't need this to be a truly self-averaging quantity, right?
Are you saying it's not a self-averaging quantity? Then what does it mean? A lot.
Can you just look at the typical versus average and answer this question?
It's typical equals average, yeah.
You're saying typical equals average.
Yeah, essentially. Mm-hmm. In this case, yeah. There are some variations, you know, in the slope, but they're not very important. But okay, so maybe let's come back to this later. Mm-hmm. So another feature is that so you can look at the saturated entanglement at long times, right? And you find that it's actually proportional to the system size, right? So entanglement, you've generated extensive entanglement. So how do we understand this? Right. So, and so let's discuss.
But the coefficient of the entanglement per length is not thermal. Right?
No. Yeah. That's important. So this is less, right? Or in some cases much less than thermal entanglement. So system does not truly thermalize.
What is thermal entanglement?
Thermal entanglement. Well, essentially, if you start with a state which has a lot of energy, right? It would be just essentially number of spins log two. Right, because you have infinite temperature state, yeah.
But if you have finite temperature, it just you have some energy is conserved. Your energy is the thermal entropy density. The thermal entropy density times L is the.
Okay, so now let me quickly explain the origin of this phenomenon, and so this would give us some insights into what MBL phase is like. And mechanism turns out to be very simple of entanglement growth. So this has been Papich myself. This was 1304. So let's consider just a very simple model, just two particles which are placed in under some insulator, and let's prepare each one of them in a superposition of two nearby orbitals. Right, so these are orbitals 1, 2, 3, 4. Then I prepare initial state, which is just equal weight superposition. Okay. Then I take this distance to be large, much larger than localization length. So then what you find is that eigenstates are really close to the product states. But the energy acquires small correction because there is a small, exponentially small probability for the particles to meet somewhere in between and interact. So there is a correction which is some constant interactions e to the minus x over xi. And now if you time evolve this state, this correction starts to matter. Right? Because over long times it would randomize the phases and over time, which is inverse of this, so it's 1 over v e to the x over xi. Right, you would completely dephase, state becomes non-separable, and you generate entanglement. Right, so dephasing and entanglement. Right, so this essentially tells you that because of sort of remaining interactions in this phase, you have a spreading of correlation which goes like that. So it's x of t is xi log vt. Instead of light cone, you have a log cone in this case. This is the intuition. So any question about this? Yeah.
So now you only think that the Lee-Robinson velocity is zero.
Yeah.
So I guess, but it doesn't follow, I think, from this, right?
Well, Lee-Robinson velocity
could be still non-zero.
Yeah. So it's just, yeah.
Only in the Anderson phase, Anderson localized zero, and in this, is that the right?
Right. So in Anderson localized phase, you don't get any spreading of correlations.
Do we know what is Lee-Robinson velocity here? I mean, is there some?
I'll mention it in a second. Yeah. So, okay. Any other questions?
So it looks like the dephasing can happen sort of spatially, non-locally, right?
Non-locally.
Arrange your state and then dephase it.
Exactly. So here you have, essentially, this tells you a very simple thing, right? You can generate entanglement without moving things globally, right? So this is actually different from the ergodic case where, you know, things move around and generate entanglement. Here they stay, right? But they dephase, and that's what generates entanglement. But this is a very simple kind of entanglement, right? It's all dephasing. So, for example, if I wanted to, let's say if I wanted to create some coherent state here, and if I wanted to restore its coherence, I just need to do spin echo, right? So I completely recover my initial state. There is only dephasing, no relaxation. Okay. Any other question? So if not, so let me. I'm running out of time, so let me very briefly. I'll keep this. So let me very briefly describe what MBL phase looks like more generally, sort of beyond this cartoon argument. So essentially, the key to understanding it and predicting some of the properties is that it has a lot of local integrals of motion. So how do you arrive at this? So you, let's consider spin 1/2 chain, which is many body localized with some Hamiltonian H. So then the picture is that you can connect the eigenstates to up-down product states by a sequence of local unitary transformations, right? So you can diagonalize the whole spectrum by transformation, which is generally quasi-local. So it only generates short-range entanglement. And so, and from this, you can immediately define. So for every site, you know, let me define an operator tau, which would be just addressing a z operator on the site with operator u.
Wait, so by diagonal you mean just a sum of on-site operators?
For right. So let's say I pick up down basis, right? So essentially,
okay, in that basis,
this would connect. Yeah, right. So picking basis is important, okay, right? Because okay, here, you know, sigma iz is diagonal in this basis, right? And therefore, tau iz is an integral of motion, right? So tau iz commutes with the Hamiltonian. Moreover, different tau z's would commute with each other, obviously. But what is crucial is the locality, right? So if I plot the action of tau z on spins, it is quasi-local, right? So it's strongly affecting spins in some region, and then it decays on some scale xi, right? So in a sense, I mean, you can think of the profile of this operator as, you know, generalization of a localized wave function. And then, you know, once you have this picture, it's very easy to write the Hamiltonian in terms of tau z's, right? So it can only depend on tau z, not on tau x, right? So the most general thing you can write is just products of different tau z's. And in principle, you're allowed to have two and three spin interactions, right? But these interactions decay exponentially. So we stop here. So essentially, we can now kind of just complete this picture, right? So we have two general regimes of entanglement growth. So right, so here entanglement grows as a function of time, at least in some cases. So it's a question whether it holds more generally. And here, entanglement grows as log of time. So, So I'll stop here, I guess.
If there are any questions.